Okay. So, we were doing a little bit with Zavoda part two. We were talking, so we understand what's going on. We read the Avoda in Shul, we have a better insight into what's happening. I'm excited. I'm going to keep, I have my notes. I have around, I think, around 47 pages now on the Avoda. So, it just, if you know what's going on that level, it changes what's, when you're flying through the Avoda, it's just the pious, this, that.
It's the most dramatic part of the
right, it, it's a. It's Rav Soloveitchik talked about that being the pin, you know, like the pinnacle of his year is like when they get the Avoda and Yom Kippur, and there's a lot there, especially if you're learning Kachshim and you're trying to figure out what's going on. So the Mishnah and Yoma, we'll go inside soon, but I just want to say out a few ideas before we get into the heavy stuff. Mishnah and Yoma says that when the Kohen puts the Ketores in the Lifnai v'Lifnim, which was a special, by the way, addition for Yom Kippur, Daka min Adaka, you read about in the Avoda. He throws it on the fire, burning on the floor, on the machte. Right? He's got the pan over there, and he puts it there on the floor, and he stands there until the house, the inner chamber, fills completely with smoke. That's what the Mishnah says. So he mamish has to stand the whole time. It could take a while. The whole space could take a while. So why is that? Why should you do that? So I saw the Brisker Rav. I was doing a lot of pieces from Ravelville on Yoma. There's some great grizzes on Yoma. It's right here. You could take a look. You can go through the grizz on Yoma. And Ravelville says that it's a din that the Kohen should stand in the location where the Avoda itself is kosher. So if the Avoda right now is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he has to stand there. If the Kohen has to stand there in that spot, he has to stand wherever the avoda, the action is happening. There's a din that the Kohen stands by the avoda that's happening. So that's what he has. He has to be there by it. It's a din in the avoda. That's what Ravelville says. So the Kohen has to remain kosher. Also says Ravelville. Oh, that was what's different. Ravelville says the Kohen has to remain kosher for the entire duration of the avoda. So that's what's that?
Spartan like a dim.
So, yeah, that's why. It's like a movie, Spartan like a dark.
That's a good shot.
Okay, fine. So now, scratch that. Now the. So the Rav Soloveitchik, Ravelville Soloveitchik said, based on this, we understand why he has to wait. You don't just have to wait for the Maisa, Ravelville says. You also have to wait for the Kiyam. So we talked about the end of last week how some places have a minug to wait by the Kriya Satora. There's a little gap there. There's no Kiddush Club then, but there's a little gap there. Why? It's the same pause that's talked about in the Gemara for waiting until the Ish Iti would go to the beginning of the Midbar, the one who was supposed to take the Seir Lazazel out, till that, the one who was appointed, makes it out there to the edge of the Midbar. There was a little gap. And the Ravelville, the Brisker Rav, wants to tie this all in together. The waiting was waiting for each avoda to be completed. The Kohen always needs to be by their avoda, whatever it is in Yom Kippur. They got to be by their avoda. And the Kiyum only happens once they're done with their particular avoda, and then you could go on to the next stage of the day. Okay, that was just, I just wanted to make that point because that finished up what I said last week, and it's about transitioning. Another little nugget. We talked about last week how the Beis Yosef made a lot of changes to the avoda. He corrected and fixed a lot of things. That's why nowadays, it used to be the Sfardim had a hodgepodge of information in the avoda, and a lot of it was incorrect. And once the Beis Yosef came along, he corrected all the mistakes. He sat there with the Gemara and the Rishonim, and he sat there very carefully making sure the avoda process, the way we had it in the Siddur, matched up exactly with the way it's supposed to be. So it turns out now the Ashkenazim have more holes in their, that's why the new Rav Soloveitchik Siddur that came out a couple years ago tried to repair. Rav Soloveitchik was very into this topic, try to repair a lot of the avoda, discrepancies between the way the Rishonim have it and the way our Machzer has these things. One of those differences was the amount of vowels we talked about, 4 versus 3. So fine. So now, another change which the Beis Yosef introduced, which wasn't introduced into the Nusach Ashkenaz, we have to check if the Rav Soloveitchik Machzer fixed it, is that when the Kohen Gadol does the Zrikas Dam Par V'Seir, he does 4 times Zrikas Dam. He does it 4 times. And he does once up and 7 sets of down. 1 up and 7 sets of down. So we only say it twice. Right. We only say it twice. Beis Yosef said it should be said 4 times. Because that's what he did. That's what the Kohen Gadol did. He did it 4 sets of Zrikas Dam. What?
Svard says it
twice or four?
Four.
Oh, really?
Really?
Wow. You're holding.
Yeah.
Go ahead. See?
My question to you is this. How is there discrepancies? I mean, where's the Beis Yosef getting his sources from that are...
Some of the problem, I have to admit, we talked about last week for a minute, starts between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, deciding between them.
And in the Gemara,
you have a lot of Girsos there. But fine, even the Gemara itself, what the Beis Yosef did, he sat with the Gemara and the bottom line Rishonim. What are the Rishonim deciding here? It could be that the one that was composed and the one that we had originally and the Avodah that was put together could have been fished together with just the Yerushalmi alone or just the Bavli alone and nothing else, not trying to be Machria the right way between the Rishonim. I'm not sure.
Does the Gemara give a reason why it would be different than the Sora?
No, because the Gemara, the Beis Yosef is actually more precise with the Gemara. It fits the variance of the Gemara. I don't know how it got to the middle stage where everything got messed up with the Siddur itself.
Not to walk on the route. In the Gemara itself, there's a machlok is what the Seder Abayi is. It's a huge machlok.
Yeah.
With the Masapim and all that, so it's not clear.
Right.
The Gemara and Yuma to begin with. Why that exists?
What?
Right.
Well, these machlokesim are in the Mishnayos. You have already, for example, one machlokes Tanayim was the nusach of the nusach over how the Kohen Gadol would keep track of his sprinkling. Right. How would the Kohen Gadol keep track of his sprinkling? So the psukim, what?
This is halacha. This was actually done, in fact.
Yeah, but
that's the first machlokes. You have that in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Erevin says one of the first machlokesim was over. What happened Shabbos Pesach? And the Hillel came in and said, no one knew, no one's been watching what's been going on here. They've been doing it, but different shifts of Kohanim had different traditions they came in with. And there was no set, no one decided this is the way it's going to be. So people all came with different
things.
We talked about last week. We talked about last week how, very interesting, it seems that the Gemara's explanation seems to conflict a little bit with the what the written law says about what to do, especially the dips and the gold and the white. We talked about that. It's a famous Brisker Rav on that. You can listen to the audio. It's been uploaded online. It's online. It talked about the Brisker Rav, what he said. Well, Yom Kippur's a tribute to the Oral Torah's interpretation, and that's how we go. We talked about eye for an eye, not fitting with the pshat that the Gemara has with eye for an eye. It doesn't seem what the Chumash is saying. What do you do when oral law conflicts with written law? We talked a little bit about that, and there's a famous Brisker Rav on it and why Yom Kippur's perfect for that. So I'll leave that aside for now. But this, but you mentioned the Mishnayos have it. Machlokas over the nusach of how the Kohen Gadol would keep track of the sprinkling. So the psukim requires, as it learned out, that it should be one marked and then seven marked. One marked and then seven. Not counting one through eight. You do one separate and then seven separate. He marks one through the one and then one through the four, five, six, seven. That's the machlokas. The Gemara then says, and this is where it gets confusing again for the Girsos, the Gemara then says, this is no machlokas. This is not a halachic debate. This is whatever the Kohen felt was easier for him to... There's no kiyum over here. Right. This is whatever the Kohen felt was... It says, mar kedeisei, or mar kedeasrei. Not kedeisei, kedeasrei. Like he did in his place, and he did in their place. Mar kedeasrei.
Flexibility.
Yeah, you have some flexibility. So it's also a challenge figuring out which things were flexible and which thing were a din. So the Magen Avraham has a similar discussion in how we count the Sfiras Omer. He thought maybe the count should be changed based on the way societies normally count. What's the normal way to count? He has a whole discussion how you normally count.
One, two.
Yeah, up, you down. I'm not going to discuss that. You say weeks and days, days and weeks. How do you do it? I mean, that would change a lot of the Divrei Torah everybody says about this way, that way. So there's a mugging out from that. Finally, that side. One more simple thing, and then we get heavy, is just the pregame show. Just to know what the beforehand, what went on beforehand. So the Gemara and Yoma, Beis Amid Aleph, you have it there in the Maror Makomos. It says that it's the opening Mishnah and Yoma. It says 7 days before Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol was separated from his house and moved to the Lishkas Farhedrin. Farhedrin chamber. The Farhedrin chamber was, if you have the whole layout. You ever see those pictures, the whole layout? So it's right smack in the middle at the, if you're standing over, if it's right over here. Okay. Here's the base of Migdash. There's challah in the fridge if you washed.
It's okay.
Oh.
I didn't make a bracha.
Very good, very good. That's a shear on its own. There's challah though in the fridge if you wanted to.
Okay.
That's a shear. That's good. Okay, fine. So the Beis HaMikdash is like this. Beis HaMikdash is like this. And then, and here was the Lishka Sfarhedrin. Right over here, the Lishka Sfarhedrin. It was right next to the Lishka where he would go for the Paraduma, the Kohen. He was also separated there for 7 days before. That was in a different spot, where the holding chamber, where he would practice, where he would get ready. So they would set him up for 7 days, and this would allow him to focus and concentrate on the Avodas Yom Kippur. And he has to sort of purify himself, get ready to do everything. So the Tiferes Yisrael on the Mishnah, on the side of the Mishnah, the Tiferes Yisrael, he says twice during the 7 days. He says twice during the 7 days, which was days 3 and day 7. 7, which is Erev Yom Kippur, right? The Kohen Gadol was sprinkled with some of the ashes of the Paraduma. Why? Because just in case he might have become Tamei by touching a dead body. If 3 or 7 fell on Shabbos, they postponed the sprinkling of the ashes. He didn't do it. If it was Shabbos, he didn't do it. You pushed it off. You might not have a 7 that year. You might not have a second one. That's fine. And the last thing is there, you can look inside. The last simple thing is the Rambam in Hilchas Avodas Yom Kippurim, Perek Aleph, I think it's Halacha Dalet over there. You have the whole tutorial process. The Kohen Gadol would go through everything. He threw the blood of the sacrifice to the Mizbeach. He burned the incense. He prepared the lamps. Then they would ask him. The Chum would turn to him and say it back to us, because we want to make sure you remember it and you don't forget anything. And you have to really know the whole thing inside out, so the whole process would go smoothly without any mistakes whatsoever. Very interesting process. Yeah.
Great kasha. I'm sure you can deal with this. Is when they were mashbiah the Kohen Gadol, they told him not to be like the tzaddiki. What's the point? If he was the tzaddiki, that's a famous kasha.
It's a famous. The scholarly discussion about it is sort of like the Shabtai Tzvi discussion.
No.
The answer is like the Shabtai Tzvi discussion, that a lot of even the good people, they were choshish, a lot of even the good people, to have this going on. And we know, looking back now, even many of the Gedolim, who we still learn Svarim from, might have had a little bit, a little bit of interest. So,
what?
Right. That's
no, but the question is
even the Ramchal.
Right? So over here, by
you're
the
right, but the question is, what good did the Shvua do? If this guy was not a believer, so he's
going to
say, "I'll do it your way."
No. So compared to the Shabtai Tzvi, is that you had people who were on the fence. You had people who were on the fence between Sidur Yinan. So they were telling him, "Is listen, make our life simple here in the Beis Hamikdash, and if you commit yourself to the our way of halacha."
Perhaps Lahavdil.
What? You left it at Tzarachim?
Perhaps Lahavdil, like certain Lubavitchers lean towards Mashiachism today, or even worse, Rachman al-Islam. So,
which way are you being
Lahavdil? Right, which way you're being Lahavdil, exactly.
Good question.
Not here. You have, whenever these movements happen, it's everyone thinks it's yay or nay, but they forget that there's a lot of people who are always...
Yeah, but this is more serious.
Sure. This is going to possibly hold a vote, possibly. Okay, good. That would tie into the answer, would probably tie into the Revelable piece. It talks all about the role of Torah Shabbat on Yom Kippur. You can get a whole nice schmooze out of that.
You can go somewhere with that.
Yeah, you can go somewhere with this topic. All right.
The simple answer I
brought,
not to...
Let me hear.
Even a tzaduki would be Arvon Bal Yachov Bar. But Rabbi Kiva ever believed it in Tzarek Hands, I didn't believe it.
That was the answer I had always heard.
Huh?
That was the answer that I had always heard, that a tzaduki is Yer Hashemayim.
So why did Rabbi Kiva ever believe it was about Tzarek Hands?
He didn't think what I said was right.
I'm saying why? What would be the svar? Why not?
You know what? Even a tzaduki wouldn't swear false.
Maybe Rabbi Kiva ever says once you're a tzaduki, you're choshesh on everything.
Presumably, like they still hold by Toshos Nadarim.
What?
Yeah.
Slippery slope.
That's why I think
I don't know. It's interesting.
It's also a moral thing. I mean, there are people who.
It's not a moral thing. It's a walking thing.
I mean, just in general, people who will, lie, but you would put a shmoo on them.
Right, Amos Yitzera. Right, Migo that.
Like in the ancient world, the person's word was across the Zach. Not unlike today.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. What are we keeping your serpent in? Very good. Okay, interesting discussion. We'll put that in with the Shem and Forish discussion. That's a good one. Okay, so now let's get a little heavier. Take a look at the Mishnah and Yoma. Samach. Ahmed Aleph?
Salah.
Hopefully I put that there.
I.
Salah on page 5.
You see Salah on page 5? Yeah, I know. Okay. So over here, the Mishnah and Yoma. Maise, kol maise Yom Kippur, memra al Seder. There's a very specific order, proper sequence that has to be done during the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. A very specific order to the Avoda. And the Gemara right afterwards, if you continue past this, page 5, but the Gemara continues afterwards, the Sugya, and Rabbi Yochanan at the bottom, has a machlokas, Rab Nechemya and Rabbi Yehuda, around the nature of this Chiyuv. Here's basically their chakira. Was this need for order said specifically with the unique Yom Kippur additions that were done with the Big Day Lavan, with the white clothing that were worn in the place of the standard gold? Or does it apply only those unique avodas that were performed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? This need for order, Kol Maisa Yom Kippurim HaOmer Ala Seder, this need for order, was that need for order said on all the unique avodas of Yom Kippur, or was it only said on the unique avodas that were done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? For example, would the sequence apply to the lottery process, to the Vidui confession, the blood sprinkling on the paroches and the curtain? These were all things that were done outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that's their machlokas. That's their machlokas, their basic machlokas. There's heavy lumdus there that everyone jumps on, and we'll get to that in a moment. So the Gemara says that the sequence demanding to collect the ketores, the incense, and sacrificing the par, which was brought as the Kohen Gadol's korban chatas, his sin offering, was the par. His own personal sin was the par. So even though those were performed outside the Kodesh Kedoshim, since they are a setup to the avodas which are going to happen inside, maybe tzorech pnim kipnim dami. You can't prove from that the order is ma'akev by them. You can't prove from those because those were really a matir to let him get inside. Those were tzorech pnim. That's a new concept we have. Tzorech pnim kipnim dami. Everything which was needed for the inside is like in the inside. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who limits the chiyuv for sequencing only to avodas pnim, he extends the condition to those things that facilitate the going inside. Even he, who limits it to the stuff inside, will say it extends to the things that get him to the inside. Okay, so the Mishnah also says here a specific order for the ceremony of the par useir. Okay, the par useir. So the par, as we said, was the Kohen Gadol special par. And that comes before the Seir, which is, by the way, what's the Seir for? That's the famous one. That's the goat brought for Bnei Yisrael's Chatas. There's their Seir. I have at the beginning, page 1 is Vayikra. You see all the source of Vayikra. This is Pasuk Tes Vav, or Tes Zion, is where this Pasuk is. It's showing you that it's right after. It says what he did. Look at the Pasuk. So it says like he did with the bull, showing you what he did with the par, showing you that it's supposed to follow one from the other, that it followed it. Like he already did to the Dama Par. So you see from those words, the Dama Par already happened for him. It already happened. Now, so the question here is this, and this all the Rishonim ask, outside the page of the Gemara, all the Rishonim ask this. Is the issue with the sequence of having the par before the seir similar to the discussion and debate of the importance of a sequence by Kodesh Kedoshim or not Kodesh Kedoshim? Or is that sequence a din in something else? You understand? Is the necessity for sequence over here of par before seir a similar discussion of how things need to be in sequence if they're, according to Rabbi Yehuda, only inside the Kodesh Kedoshim? Meaning like this, and with this we're going to cover a lot of things of the Avoda in one shot. One, you have to look at the smicha and the vidoy of the par. You have leaning, the smicha and the vidoy of the par. You have the hagrola, you know what the hagrola was? That was the lottery of the seir. Who's going, who's staying, who's going to be sent off the cliff, and who's going to make it. You then had, also in the order, you have the second vidoy of the par. You then had the shchita of the par. You had the ketores. You then had the sprinkling of the blood of the par in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You then had the shchita of the seir. sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedashim, and sprinkling the Par blood in the Heichal, and sprinkling the Seir blood in the Heichal. Okay, that's the entire, that's the order of everything that was going on. Okay? Now, the Gemara, and it gets, this is a very hard Gemara here, because it's referring to things like in numbers almost, like in pronouns, and just vague, and you're not sure what it's referring to. So the Gemara talks about a situation where the sprinkling of the par, the dam hapar, the sprinkling of the dam hapar in the heichal, it talks about a situation where it came before the seir blood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It mentions a circumstance where someone did the par blood of the heichal before the seir blood of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay? Now, the Gemara says, this is not a problem in the... By the way, remember, just so you remember what's going on, the Seir blood in the Heichal was the very last thing. Let's call that number 10. That was number 10. In the 10 steps of what the Kohen was doing here, between Par... We'll make it simple. There's Par and Seir. He's going back and forth between each. Very confusing. Number 10 on his list, if he did everything right, is... he would do the blood of the par in the Heichal, which is outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That was number 10. Two steps earlier, I put it at step 8. There are many steps but I call step 8. Two steps earlier in step 8 was the sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Gemara says, what if somebody took step 10 and did it before step 8? So the Gemara says, that's not a sequencing violation. That even though we said, the Mishnah said, Kol Maisa Yom Kippurim Omar Al Seder Im Hikdim Maisa L'Chavero Lo Asa Klum, that would not be a sequencing violation. Why? I'm sorry. I gotta say it's clear. That's gonna be a sequencing violation. Why, says the Gemara? Because even though the sprinkling of number 9, what's step 9? 9 was sprinkling of the Seir blood on the Heichal. 8 is sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedashim. 9 is sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Heichal. And number 10 is sprinkling of the... 8 is sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedashim. 9 is sprinkling of the Par blood in the Heichal. And 10 is sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Heichal. So the Gemara says, what if you did the sprinkling of the Par blood in the Heichal? Number 9. Number 9... before that of sprinkling the Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedashim, which was number 8. So it's 9 and 8, not 10. Don't look at 10 right now. 9 before 8. And the Gemara says, even though 9 is outside in the Heichal and is not considered in Avodas Pnim, and therefore should not have been a problem, right? Since it's outside and shouldn't relate to our discussion, the Gemara says it's no good. You flip the order. Understand? Even though, let's say it again, even though you should argue it's fine if you did 9 before 8, because 9, which was sprinkling par blood in the Heichal, was not an avodas pnim. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only avodas pnim that need your right order. It's only avodas pnim that need the right seder. If I do this stuff outside in a different order, that's not ma'akev according to Rabbi Yehuda. Still over here, even Rabbi Yehuda concedes that if I do 9 before 8, 9 is the one that's outside the Pnim, it's no good. It disqualifies the Avoda. Okay, it disqualifies the Avoda. Why? So here comes Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Right? Rav Chaim al Rambam. Rav Chaim says like this. He says that the blood sprinkling of the par, number 9, in the Heichal, he says, and he argues, he wants to prove it from a Rambam. He wants to prove it from Rambam. He says that's considered in Avodas Pnim. It's not, the only couple ways he's going to solve it. That's one way he could solve it. Is call it Avodas Pnim. What? But it's not. He's outside. So he says, even though Afal Gavda Kohen Omed Begufo Mechutz LeKodesh Kedoshim, even though the Kohen's physically standing outside the Kodesh Kedoshim, Bizman Zrikas Adam Al Aprochus, while he's sprinkling the Bran Aprochus, since he's sprinkling on the Parochus, Keneged Ha'aron, since he's parallel to the ark, it's considered like a pnim. Okay, it's considered like a pnim. The second stage of the Heichal ceremony, which was the sprinkling of the Seir blood on the Mizbeach, that's clearly in Avodas Chutz, he says. It's outside the Kodesh Kedoshim. So therefore, according to Rav Chaim, this Gemara is talking about a switching of two Avodas Pnim. 9 switched with 8, therefore it's going to be a Psul. That's where Rav Chaim Brisker wanted to solve this problem. Rashi.
What do you mean parallel to the arm?
You're facing. Here, you know
right.
What the.
This has a projector. Towards the middle. So the arm sticks in the middle of them. He's standing on the other side of the curtain.
Right through it. He's facing towards the curtain, and beyond the curtain is the arms right
okay.
There.
Between
since he's facing it in that direction, it's like he's it's an avodas pnim. While the other way in the Heichal was the Mizbeach, throwing the blood in the Mizbeach, that's a different direction. That's a different direction. Okay, you could think, lum this on your own, why is throwing in the direction of the Aaron considered according to the Rambam as Pnim? Alright, that's lum this, you could come up with a svar on your own to explain that. Rashi has a different solution. Rashi says, sprinkling the blood of the par in the Heichal, number 9, now we got our numbers down, number 9 is an Avodas Chutz. It's definitely an Avodas Chutz. Still, the sequencing violation applies. Why? Because it preempted the sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Because it came before 8, which is an Avodas Pnim. What's the Svara Rashi is getting at? That...
It screwed up the order of Pnim, even though it's something out.
Right, meaning
it's outside, still screwed up the order.
You don't care, right? You don't care about the outside stuff. It doesn't, the mix in an order and the outside stuff doesn't really bother you. But if it affects the Avodas Pnim, that's gonna be a problem. If it preempts an Avodas Pnim that should have been put there, that's an Avodas Pnim issue. So it's interesting. They both went at this problem in two different ways. Rav Chaim said you have to say it's an Avodas Pnim. Figure out some way to call it an Avodas Pnim. According to Rashi, it's not. It's outside. What are you saying? I'm facing. It's not. This is classically not an Avodas Pnim. Rashi's telling you. My chalukah is Rav Chaim and Rashi, but Rashi's telling you. He'll have to rely on different Rishonim. Maybe Rambam. I'm sure that's what it is. Rav Chaim al Rambam. He's basing it on the words of the Rambam. So it's my chalukah is Rashi and Rambam, which is okay. So now the Rashi is saying, no, you can't call it. It's not Brisker Torah. You could just call it Avodas Pnim when it's not Avodas. It's not Avodas Pnim. But it's an Avodas Chutz that's affecting. You're messing around with where Avodas Pnim should have been. And therefore, it's a problem for the Avodas Pnim job. And therefore, that's why what the problem is. Okay, that's the problem. Okay. Still in the same sugya. In earlier Gemara and Yoma, right around this Mishnah, it's right after this Mishnah, so an earlier Gemara has a situation where the sprinkling of the par blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim, that was number 6, by the way, sprinkling of the Dama par in the Kodesh Kedoshim. If anybody needs the order, I can retell you the order. You had Smicha, you had the Hagrola, the lottery, and by number 6 already, number 6 you already, the after all the Shechitas, you're already the sprinkling of the par blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim. So the Gemara says, what if you did the sprinkling of the par blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim before you did the Hagrola, the lottery, to decide between the two Seirim? Right? Which was step 2. You did 6 before 2. What?
According to Rashi, that would still be a problem.
Oh, great. So the Gemara says it's fine. The Gemara said if you did 6 before 2, you're okay. So according to Rav Chaim / the Rambam, it's easy. Because you could say the Hagrola is clearly an Avodas Chutz. And therefore, sequencing violations, according to Rav Yehuda, only hurt when it's Mamish Bifnim. Rashi would have to defend and say... You have a Svar? You have a Svar? How to defend Rashi? I think Rashi would say that since in Avodas Pnim came before... preempted in Avodas Chutz, no Avodas Pnim has been delayed. You haven't hurt the Avodas Pnim. You know what I mean? I think you'd have to do that with Rashi. You have anything, you brought Avodas Pnim earlier. You didn't delay and cause a delay of game on the Avodas. You didn't impinge on the covet of the Avodas Pnim. If anything, you did it earlier. In the previous situation, the sprinkling of the power blood of the Heichal preempted what should have been first in Avodas Pnim. I think that's what you have to say in Rashi. Okay, unless somebody else has a different
Svara, I don't know how you're going to get around that. But I saw the Tosfos Yeshanim, which I put here on the side. It's a very small print if you could read it.
Maybe it's something to do with the way the lottery is conducted, or who conducted it, or what. Or
what's that?
One of the details of the lottery that's conducted.
What do you mean? How does the lottery work?
Yeah, who
next.
Did it? Who
next.
Did it? Where
I'm
going
to tell the lottery, and I'm going to. I have time for lottery. I'm going to get the lottery. Lottery's next.
I'm saying, but maybe that has maybe the details of that.
Good, excellent.
Will
affect.
Will give you some light.
Maybe it is.
Why.
Okay, good. I think even according to Reb Chaim, I mean, I don't know anybody who would consider the that an avodas panim. I mean, not like I've seen it all, but I'm saying.
I mean, was the Kohen Gadol
it's so clearly an avodas chutz.
Was it some assistance?
You picked.
We're gonna get to that in 3 minutes.
I've never been to one, so I don't know.
You get to the Mishul HaGrola?
Apparently you've been to one.
The Mishul HaGrola.
You guys are downtown.
Okay, it's the entire fourth parak of Yoma is who and what and when.
Is there
okay.
A difference between a HaGrola and a Pious?
Yeah, there are differences between
yeah.
the two. HaGrola was a different ceremony
out
altogether.
Box,
Pious is see what who did what avoda, and it worked with a different
Pious
type format for the lottery. The Gemara talks about. Gemara is the beginning of fourth parak.
Right?
Yeah, two and one and four. Put out their fingers. The Tosfos Yeshanim says like this.
Yeah.
He gives you a different way of understanding this. Very interesting. It's there. It's very small print on page 6 at the top. His whole svara is like this. Sequencing violations are going to disqualify only if both rescheduled avodas are avodas pnim. Okay? Sequencing violations are only going to disqualify if both of the rescheduled ones are avodas pnim. Right? That's more like Reb Chaim with the Rambam. By preempting Hagrola, by preempting Hagrola, the sprinkling of the par blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim is not going to cause a problem. But contrast that with sprinkling par blood in the Heichal, number 9, before sprinkling Seir blood in the Kodesh Kedoshim is going to be invalid. That is going to be invalid. Why? Because even though sprinkling par blood is an Avodas Chutz, not like Reb Chaim there, because that's going to disrupt the sequence of the blood sprinkling. So he's sort of splitting between the two. He says there's a special sequence requiring the sprinkling and how the sprinkling is supposed to be done. Disrupting the order of the sprinkling is a special psul, even if one of them is an avodas chutz. That's a totally different shot. So by performing 9 before 8, you're disrupting the zrika schedule. So what you have here, let's review. Reb Chaim said, our issue is only with things that are mamish avodas pnim. So what if it looks like the problem is by something which is a chutz? Call it a pnim. It's a pnim. It's facing pnim, it's a pnim. Rashi said, but you have to say the pshat, you have to say with Rashi, is that Rashi is going to say that was mamish a chutz, but it affected the schedule of pnim. While the hagrola being changed out for the sprinkling of the seir and the kodesh kodashim, you weren't hurting the pnim. It's the question is whether you hurt the pnim in some way. That's Rashi. The Tosfos Yeshanim says no. It only applies by things that are pnim mamish, and that's it. There is a separate consideration among zrikas. Are you doing the zrikas in the right order? That's another issue. Are your zrikas being flipped around? That's a totally separate requirement. That's a totally separate requirement. That's the svar of the that's the Tosfos Yeshanim. Okay, that's Tosfos Yeshanim. Very interesting. I think with that. Tosfos Yeshanim, you have the following. The Gemara says that if you preempted the sprinkling of the par, dama par in the Heichal, with the sprinkling of the Seir blood in the Heichal, that's 10 with 9. That's 10 with 9. That's going to passel up the whole process. That's going to disqualify the process. Why? So according to Rav Chaim, the Gemara is talking about the sprinkling on the parochas, which he considers an avodas panim. He'll solve the problem that way. According to the other opinions, which call all Heichal sprinkling avodas chutz, Rashi calls it avodas chutz. How can Rabbi Yehuda accept this? How can Rabbi Yehuda accept this Gemara? Why should rescheduling two avodas chutz be a problem? 10 and 9, why should it be a problem? So, for Rashi, I don't know how to solve it. You could say he must be agreeing somehow with Tosfos Yeshanim. Tosfos Yeshanim shot would solve it. That when you're messing around with sprinkling schedules, that's a separate psul. That's a separate problem. So you have a nice three-way machlokas here, how to understand the scheduling issues. And what's going on. Okay, that's that topic. Let's talk now about the lottery, the Hagrola. So, you would have to bring two identical Seirim into the Beis HaMikdash. Two identical Seirim into the Beis HaMikdash. Like a Ben Sor Amar. Now, the fourth parak of Yoma talks about the lottery, how the box, how was it all done, what was the format, goes through everything, and how is it held? It's done by Kohanim. How is it done? And it's held to determine which of these two would be sent to its death in the desert itself. Okay, which we sent to his death. And which is sacrificed in the base Mikdash, and its blood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, the selection process seems like, when you go through the Gemaras there, it seems like, unlike any other hafrasha or dedication process of any korban, usually when a person, we talked about this a little bit by the Korban Pesach, when a person offers a sacrifice, designates the animal as a certain type of korban, so you do a verbal maisa hekdesh, so that's a declaration that you're bestowing upon the animal the status of kachim, and it's going to be kadosh because of that. And the human is the one who's authorized to do that. Just like we could do by a Torah, lishma. We had four shirim on lishma, and just like we do lishma. Now, the se'irim on Yom Kippur is the rule breaker. The se'irim on Yom Kippur is the rule breaker. Here, the outcome of the lottery and not human action is what determines the status of the animal. Okay, and this topic that Achronim love, they love this, that it seems so different because the Hekdesh is known to be conferred by humans usually. It's a gift that God gave to humans. And by the lottery, it's not really a human action which is going to determine the status. So we have to weigh a couple things. Is there any role of Amira whatsoever over here in this process, technically? Is there any role of Amira?
There is. The Kohen Gadol says...
announces. Right. Does that, is that just letting people know? Or was that a halachic a category? And number two, what's the relationship of the person who conducts the lottery? Is that his Maisa? We have to talk about that as well. See how much we get through. So the Gemara in Yoma Mem Amud Beis. This is in the sheet there.
After they did the lottery,
they mixed them up.
They lost track of which one's which.
Plug it in. Why? What's the...
I'm just thinking, like, if it's conferred by verbal, then...
he has like a neder. He has to reply. He has to repay it.
I don't know, because what happens if they mix them up? Do they do lottery again, or do they say, okay, this are, we don't know, we have to get two other ones?
That's definitely a five gemaras in Shas. I don't know by heart. Mr. Banks, no.
There was no way to mix it up because he reached into the box, and the little box, and the two things were alike in dimension or whatever.
As long as there's a Gemara, there's a way to mix
it up. One on one on the left, one on the right. And one of them said Lashem, and one of them said Lazozo, as I understand it.
But were he, Lu Yitzuya, he were to trip and to fall off afterwards, after they put the string on, there was confusion, there was a fire right outside, and confusion ensued. I mean, a Gemara come up with a situation. A fire ensued right outside, and they don't know which one is which. What do you do?
Turn around, and the two sheep
is it? That's maybe not. Because he's saying it might be different if it's not conferred by human. All right, that would be enough, Kamina. But I don't know where the Gemara is. I'll look again at the fourth parak. I ran through. I'll look again at the fourth parak. I'll see. It's definitely Gemara. It has to be. Okay. So the Gemara in Mem Amud Beis so tells you that it's supposed to be a different process between the selection of Seirim over here and the selection of a regular Korban. The Gemara gets it, actually, the distinction from the Pasuk in Vayikra, Pasuk Tes. The Gemara there, Mem Amud Beis, tells you directly. Where's my Pasuk page? Okay. And the Pasuk they quote is, V'hikriv Aaron es ha-Seir, asher alav agora la-Hashem, va'aso chatas. Okay, the Gemara wants to learn from there that the asher agora la-Hashem, which places the action not upon him, but upon out of his hands. Right? It says exactly, asher Allah alav hagora, meaning it takes it away from the human doing it. It makes it more God's work. Okay? So that would indicate that the and the Sifrei says it straight out. This pasuk teaches you that it's the goral which causes the chatas and velo hakohen and not the kohen himself. Okay, it's the goral that would seem to exclude the kohen gadol
from any active role in deciding the faith. By the way, Ben, we got it. It's the Kohen Gadol would do the he would do the Goral. It would be him who's in charge. Now, you had mentioned earlier that the Mishnah on Lamed Tesem and Aleph says that the lottery, after the lottery was held, the Kohen would say Lashem Chatas, Lashem Chatas, and so the Mishnah seems to say. Do I have the? Did I bring the Gemara down from there? The Mishnah, I think, when I was reading it, seemed to say that it's almost just like a chazara to let people know what happened, or an announcement. It was a bulletin. Like a
public service.
Here, it says echad kosev alav l'shem, ve'echad kosev alav azazel, haskan b'imino v'rosh beisav mismolo. So im shal ish kohen gadol hagba yiminko, im shal alav ismolo, rosh beisav omar lo ish kohen gadol hagba smol, ketam hu to lift, nosan al shnei asirim, ve'amar, and when he'd say, he would say la'ashem chatas. Rabbi Shmuel says lo yatzarech lomar chatas, he would say el la'ashem, and they would say baruch shem kvod malchuso le'olam voed. You can't tell yay or nay what this Amira is doing from the Mishnah. It is what it is. So the Gemara on Lamed Tesem and Beis talks about Machlokes Amorayim, whether the omitting of that lottery process would it ruin, right, would it be Ma'akev or not. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, if they leave out the lottery, the rest of the Avoda is not going to be affected. If they omit the Hagrala, if they omitted the Hagrala, the Avoda is not going to be affected. So if you have no Hagrala, then what's going to distinguish between the two? What's going to distinguish between the two animals, between the two Seirim? So Rabbeinu Chananel, because of this, a famous Rabbeinu Chananel on the side of Lamed Tesem Beis, Rabbeinu Chananel said he totally reread the Gemara. So according to the way Rabbeinu Chananel, you see it straight there in Lamed Tesem Beis, according to the way Rabbeinu Chananel rereads the Gemara, he says, according to him, Rabbi Yochanan needs a lottery to give you the identities. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, you need, the most lenient opinion, you need still to confer the identities. However, it doesn't need to be at the exact point. All Rabbi Yochanan was trying to say that it's not Ma'akev the Agrala, was it doesn't need to be at that exact point when the Torah said it's supposed to come. It could be at a different point, but not that chas v'chalila you could do this without the conferring, okay? Without the hagrola, okay? And although in general the Torah's order has to be listened to, when it comes to the lottery, the hagrola, Rabbi Yochanan's teaching you it's okay if it's switched around the order because it's a picking process. But no one, Rabbeinu Chananel says, nobody would ever say that you did not need the hagrola. It's ma'akev. Even when the Gemara says it's not ma'akev, what they meant was the sequence is not ma'akev, not the hagrola. You have to change words in the Gemara. And that's what Rabbeinu Chananel did. He gave you a different girsa. You have to mamish change words there. And that's Rabbeinu Chananel. Okay, 39b, Rabbeinu Chananel. Rashi takes the Gemara very literal, that Rabbi Yochanan holds that no hagrola is necessary. It's not ma'akev, 39b. No hagrola is necessary. So in the absence of a hagrola, how are you going to then decide which seir is what? So Rashi tells you, Mamish Rashi tells you that he does specifically via Amira. HaKohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is the one who's going to pick what's, right, the Ma'akva. He says, the Animil the Ma'akva. He says the Kohen Gadol is going to pick what it is. He's going to confer. What according to Rashi you have to say is, the Torah was giving you a preferred process. A preferred process as to how to pick between these two animals. And Rashi's telling you that was just a preferred way. But either way, they're two parallel tracks. The preferred one, which is the Hagrala, and the Bidyeved, the second best one, which is the standard verbal designation in general. Standard verbal designation. Okay, so that's, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, there's no room for a Kohen Zemira. There's no room for a Kohen Zemira by Hagrala. And you have to say his announcement in the Mishnah was just like me announcing after davening the davening times. Yeah.
Problem is, there's no b'di'evit in the Torah.
Is there a lechachilim b'di'evit in the Torah?
No such thing.
That's Rav Yosef Engel talks about it.
Really?
That he thinks there is a there's a lichet. He has like a list of 9 or 10 lichet filas in the Torah. Yeah, mitzvah lichet filas. The famous Rav Yosef Engel. What? Lichet filas. The famous Rav Yosef Engel. We can do it one time. It's in the S von der Eise. It's in the S von der Eise. There's a whole piece on it. Okay, but would seem like not. Now, so we talked about, I read to you just now, the Mishnah of how the Kohen Gadol would put his hand, both hands into the box. When he faces, he puts both hands in the box when he faces the two Seerim. And then by picking up one name in each hand, he therefore is going to designate the Seir. If the plate with Hashem's name is raised in the right hand, and the Seir to the right became the Korban, and the other one was Lazazel, and the Kohen Gadol was lift his right hand, and that would finalize and it would publicize the event. And the reverse happened if the plate with God's name was in the left hand. Okay. Reb Eliezer.
Rabbi, I'm sorry.
Go, please.
Just struck your train of thought.
No.
Is there any...
need a break.
I mean, probably not. Is there anything to the randomness of it?
What?
Is there any sort of symbolism to the randomness?
Rav Huttner, I think, had a piece on this with Purim, where he tied it into Purim. Yom Kippur, and the girl, the Goral. Yom Kippur Hua Goral, both tying together. He has a beautiful piece, how they both go perfectly together. And Purim is also related to with Torah Shebal Peh, because Kiblu, Hadar V'Kiblu Me'ach HaShverosh, there's a whole lot. Rav Shechter online has a, I've heard him give it like 4 times, so it must be online. I once Rav Shechter gave on this, in Torah Shebal Peh, and Rav Huttner, and the Hadar V'Kiblu Me'ach HaShverosh, and it was Shabbos Purim. I remember I was still drunk from the day, going into the night. From the day, was I drinking that day? And then that night was Purim, and Rav Shechter was giving a shiur at Tisha YU, and he had his notes. Rav Shechter had his notes in front of him. So what I did was, after he was done, I took his notes. I figure Rav Shechter just used them for mnemonic. It doesn't look like anything he keeps on file. It's like, it's a page folded in half, and he wrote, I see him write, the before shiur, he'll quickly open his Rolodex called his mind, and he'll quickly just write on a paper, and I'll have a whole shiur. So I was out of it. I took the paper afterwards, like, you know, someone will have to take it from a rock star, like their shirt after a concert, and I took it. All of a sudden, his kid came knocking on my door. I heard you took Rav Shechter's notes. Whoa. Yeah, all right, we got to fix this tape. All right, so, all right.
You say you vomited on it.
What? One more piece of the story. I actually threw up before Shabbos. Fine. I threw up for Shabbos. In my yichud room, there was a special gift waiting for me in an envelope from a friend of mine, a real character. I opened it up. He had a picture of me, Erev Shabbos, as I was throwing up.
No.
He put it in the yichud room, the picture of me throwing up on form. I'll show you guys when you come over. All right. Anyways. Yeah.
Right next to the Super Bowl.
Right next to the Super Bowl. I didn't open it in the yichud room, but he wanted me to. I didn't know it was there till after. All right. Now, so Rabbi Eliezer is quoted as having a different scenario. To make sure that the plate with Hashem's name always ended up with the right hand, which in halacha is preferred, us lefties are, you know, second class, the Kohen Gadol and his skan each placed the right hand into the lottery box and pulled that one plate. If the plate with the coin with Hashem's name was grasped by the Kohen Gadol, he lifted his right hand. If the skan had the with the name of Hashem with the right hand, he lifted his hand. The skan did. The Kohen Gadol was told by another Kohen, the person who was the head of that rotation, by the way, the Gemara says, to say Lashem Chatas. He would whisper the Kohen Gadol, say Lashem Chatas. It sort of forces the whole thing.
It's fixed.
It's fixed. Which, if you want to say it's fixed, is okay if you're saying it's standard, really standard Amira. There was a process which the Torah recommended called Hagrola, but it was really, according to Rabbi Eliezer, this is like all other kachim. They want there to be mamish and amira. Why go through the Hagrola and pulling out, and who would get it? Okay, you have to figure out what the lumnus is there. There's a ritva which I don't even know if I'm going to get to.
Yeah, not going to. Okay, so it comes out on someone's right hand, but you don't really know which one of the two animals is going
to
get it.
Okay. Okay, so, good. But the fact that it had to be, why? No.
No.
No, you
the
do.
Right side got
the right side.
He said the right side.
No. Why
either if it happened, and the way it sounded that you explained it was that either the Kohen's right hand or the person standing to the Kohen's left would lift up his right hand.
two right hands were in the
according
box.
To Rabbi Lazar, yeah. According to Rabbi Lazar,
the Kohen's right hand.
According to Rabbi Lazar, by the way, according to Rabbi Lazar, the skan right doesn't lift his hand. The skan never lifts his hand. Even according to Rabbi Lazar, the skan never lifts
the
his hand.
Standing by the Kohen's
yeah,
right
he never
side.
Lifts it. So if he pulls it out, what would happen was the Kohen Gadol would simply belt out into his verbal designation. Meaning you would either let the Hagrola choose, and if the Hagrola didn't get that one for you in the right hand, the Kohen would then go into a verbal designation. That's Rebbe Lezer's position.
There's a Machlokes Rambam and others if other Kohanim took part in Yom Kippur. I think the Rambam held the Kohen.
What their role was over there.
Kohen Gadol had to do everything, but it wouldn't be no role, depending on what you thought this was Me'akev or not. Now, others
right.
told the other Kohanim help in the
assisted over there. The only point I wanted to make in all this was that my bottom line is that you see there is some role of Amira when it comes to the Hagrola process. There was a role. Whether it's Rashi's idea of Bidyevel Echachila, whether it's this idea of Rabbi Eliezer, which is fleshed out by the Ritva, of no, the Amira was very powerful in maybe 50% of the instances. Amira was very powerful. There is, I don't think we should just reject Amira right off the bat. And say that it had no role over here in this Hagrola process. It had a significant relationship there. And you see sometimes a small halachic debate. Well, you see from this that a small halachic debate, right hand in, put in, what if you didn't say it, is it still ma'akev, not ma'akev? It usually tells you something more about the lumdus. And that's a very major yesod just in the methodology of it. It tells you a bigger yesod is that a small technical machlokis really defines for you the role of Hagrola versus Amira. In some way, it's defining it for you and laying down a major precedent. Okay, that's all we have for tonight. There's 4,000 more topics in the Avoda, which...